The Education Committee will come to order, and this is the Policy Committee. Again, we're in competition with the Finance Committee, which is meeting, so we'll have some members coming and going, and we will hopefully get through this. For the members that are here, we are getting down to the end of the time for the first deadline, and so things are kind of drawing to a conclusion, at least on the new ideas that members have introduced. So we want to welcome Senator Sharon. And Senate, you have Senator Sharon. You have Senate File 1189. We'll start with that one.
Thank you very much, Senator Stumpf and committee members. Senate File 1189 relates to school districts' boiler operators' training requirements. Right. Sort of amused that I'm here talking about boiler operator training requirements.
Education.
Senator Brosen was teasing me in the last committee that I was in front of that I'm becoming almost a PhD in boiler operator licensing, but I can assure you that that's not true. And the reason that's important is that what we're talking about this morning is the junior boiler operators who can oversee boiler operations by simply taking a test. And I was saying that I think, based on the lots of what I've been studying and learning, I might be able to pass that test, but you really would not want me overseeing the boiler operations. So the problem is that the junior boiler operators, which are special and second-class engineers, are not receiving the education required to safely and efficiently operate the boilers in school districts. This annual training requirement that is in the bill will help address this problem by utilizing the knowledge of the senior engineers in the school districts to train and instruct these junior engineers on safe and efficient operating practices. For me, I think about it like the clinical for nursing practice. This bill also requires at least 2 hours of hands-on training in the boiler room, which they do not have now. This will give junior engineers the opportunity to ask questions and learn about the actual boilers that they will be operating. This will be a cost savings in many ways to the school districts for the following reasons. Training the junior engineers to recognize deficiencies early will reduce the maintenance costs of the boiler. It will reduce the amount of boiler downtime and prevent costly repairs. Reducing the time the senior engineers need to spend in the boiler room will also occur because the junior engineers will be able to recognize safety problems and inefficient operating practices and resolve them. Deficiencies have been documented by the state boiler inspector over the past year that should be recognized and documented or corrected by junior engineers. But during the inspections, they are identified by the state boiler inspectors as not having been recognized and not having been resolved. And examples of those things that ought to have been resolved would include small leaks in the steam and hot water systems that reduce efficiency of the boiler and allow oxygen and non-condensable gases into the system. Another example would be boiler controls are not tested regularly or being tested incorrectly. Boiler water chemistry is not being monitored correctly, and this results in costly chemicals either being wasted or, over a period of time, not enough chemicals being added to protect the boiler from corrosion and costly repairs. And there are other examples that I'll set aside because I know you have a full agenda. I have with me to sort of talk a little more about what the issue is, some representatives of staffs can talk to you about what this means and how it would assist them in being able to perform their duties. And in organizing my papers here, I misplaced. Oh, here we go. I was sort of talking for time. I'd like you to hear their stories, brief stories. I know you have a full agenda, and so they'll get very closely to the points that they want to make. And I'll start, if it's okay with you, Senator Stump with Don Morrell, who's from Anoka Hennepin School District.
Okay, thank you, Senator Sharon. And if you could just give your name for the record.
Okay. My name is Don Morrell. I'm an afternoon lead custodian at Anoka Hennepin School District. I'm also one of their union stewards. When I started in the school district 4 years ago as a custodian, they didn't really tell us that we had to take any test or any license or anything, you know, to continue with our job. Well, when I got over to the school that I work at, my fellow workers started saying, well, Donnie, you need to get one on your boiler license. And I said, great, I'm ready to do that. What do I got for training? Well, the school gave me this book. They said, here's the book. Go ahead and start reading that. That should tell you everything that you need to know, and go down and take your test. And then actually, the biggest advice they told me, which if I would have followed it, I probably would have failed, is they said, the specials test is safety, and that's it. Well, it's not. And in fact, now our specials test has even gotten harder and tougher and added more things to it. So like what Senator Sharon was saying, for whatever reason, and I don't understand, but as a steward, I'm trying to change this amongst our groups, is we do need to start helping our junior people learn. The knowledge isn't being transferred on. We're not being brought in a boiler room and explained, you know, what this part does and how to test the boilers and that type of stuff, or what this noise means as you walk in the room. This knowledge was not transferred on to us at all, and it made it tough. One of the other things is, so then I went to the district and asked them, you know, about training. Can we get it going? And they said, well, you know, they'll look into it. They haven't gone any further in helping us with the training. So when we start to take these tests, they cost money. The classes that are offered out there are very expensive. They're like $500 to $1,000. The new books now have turned into, this book has turned into these two books. And this is now what you get to study out of. And these two books here cost me $250. And we don't get reimbursed from the district for that. We're not really a high-paying field, neither. So when I started with this, it was like, boy, this job is really starting to cost me a lot of money to continue in this field. But when I started working with Joel Amato, the state boiler inspector, I started to realize it's more than just financial situation. This is a safety issue that boiler operators are not understanding the boiler room and going on in there anymore, and this knowledge needs to be passed on. So we worked hand in hand, and that's how we came up with this bill. One thing I want to kind of let everybody know for sure is that we've been working with the district, our superintendent, our school board, our bosses, our directors, my boss, everybody hand in hand, fellow union people, other custodians in other areas, and this bill was developed that way. And one of the main ideas that came out is this going to affect the school districts in cost? And it's not. It actually will help the district save money more than anything else, because we're going to be able to see the problem sooner and fix it sooner. And we're not, the fuel loss is going to be considerably less, so they're going to save thousands of dollars in fuel alone right off the bat. And through talking to our district about that, they see that very clearly, and they're in support of this bill. Our superintendent, Denny Carlson, is, and our school board and our bosses, they like the bill, and they said go for it. So with that, I will, I'm going to go ahead.
Senator Stump, I failed to
that
there
Senator
is an
Sharon.
Amendment. I'm hoping that at whatever point you determine whether that be introduced.
We do have a quorum, and we'll hand out the amendment. Is it the A1 amendment? Is it Morrell?
Yes.
Okay. Could you just touch on how exactly does it work for operating a boiler? Do you have to have, is your district, let's say, has a school with a boiler, And to actually be in charge of that boiler, isn't there a licensing system that we currently have in statute?
Yes, we do. The state of Minnesota does have that. And like I said, when I started the job, and that it wouldn't have made any difference. I would have taken the job. It's a job, and it's a good job. But they didn't explain, the whole procedure of what's required in your job. So to answer your question, yes, the state of Minnesota has these requirements, and in order to move up the line in your field even, you have to get these boiler licenses. Like for myself, to be a lead custodian in our school district, I needed a second-class boiler license. To be a building supervisor in our school district, I need my first-class boiler license. I have my first class right now. And, it kind of goes on from there. In the school districts, you probably need up to a chief's boiler license in order to top out, and you should be able to run any of the schools and the districts.
Joel Amato is here, who is the chief from D, who could answer specific questions about the process of licensing also, if you would like that.
Okay. I think the question, and I'm not sure other members have the same question, but the question is how does the proposal that you're submitting before us fit into the existing licensing system, I guess? That would probably be if you could give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Josh Whitney Wise, and I work for SEIU. This doesn't change any of the requirements for licensure. That section of the law stays the same. What this would do is it would allow the school engineers to actually have the training necessary to really be able to carry out the duties that each class of license requires them to perform.
Okay. Thank you. Maybe we should go on and with the rest of your testimony, and then maybe we'll hear from whoever's here on the licensing end of it.
Well, we need to introduce the amendment before
okay.
we do that. Or
Senator Bonhoff moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Okay. If
you'd like
to
proceed.
Sure.
Alicia Anderson is with us, and she would like to make some comments to the committee.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Alicia Anderson. I'm also a custodian for Anoka Hennepin School District as well as an SEI steward. We've worked hand-in-hand with our superintendent, our school board, several other districts, other custodians, several SEIU members to adopt this bill and make sure that it was going to be cost-effective for our school districts, given the financial burden in all the school districts right now. There will be no cost to the school district when we're asking for this training during normal work hours. We're already there. We have plenty of non-student contact days as well as the summertime that this training can happen. Our shifts overlap. A lot of people's shifts are the same. It's our senior engineers training the junior engineers to their specific boilers, which means you know what's going on in your building. You can recognize a problem and detect something early and get to the proper people that need to fix it. And that is a huge cost savings in general. We can save in maintenance costs, fuel costs, the chemical costs that are going on in our boiler rooms. Right now, we do take tests, and pretty much you take the test and you get your license, but you actually have no hands-on training. You're just, it's good luck, go down there and figure it out. Well, it's not a safe environment just to go down there and start looking around and seeing what's going on. You need to be trained in this and how to properly operate these boilers within our schools and safely operate it. And we're just asking for the 8 hours and a minimum of the 2 hours of hands-on training, which is no cost to any district. And we've looked and made sure that that's not going to happen. Many of our districts have online training every year, which this can be incorporated into, or we have yearly in-services for many of the other things that we are required annually to have training on, and this can be just part of our agenda.
Okay. Senator Olson has a question.
Yeah,
Senator
Hamm. Mr. Chairman, having have some knowledge, having worked for Anoka-Hennepin, I know that you have large facilities and staffs. So I'm hearing you say that the senior engineers would actually be doing the teaching of the junior ones. And I assume that that could be within their scope of their job, or you're it's just a matter of trying to organize and have it done. But what does the school district do that's got one building and one engineer? Do they teach themselves, or
how none of our? I'm sorry. No, thank
Senator
you. None of our buildings
Anderson.
Have.
Mr. Chairman, this Senator affects Olson. The whole. Mr. Chairman, this affects the whole state. Now, Anoka-Hennepin is the largest district and probably has the most buildings and the most staff. So, what you have in your mind works for them. How will this work for everyone? Or do the companies that provide the boilers have expertise to come in and give that in service to a one engineer district?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is it Weiss? Weiss. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson. We had been working with the Department of Labor on this, and the boiler inspectors are getting up there to make sure that those boilers are safe as well. And so we were working on getting something worked out with the Department of Labor where we would get a boiler inspector up there to get those engineers operating the boilers safely.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions, and one similar to what Senator Anderson or Senator Olson was just asking. If you say the school district shall provide, and if you only have one engineer, as she mentioned, and your response was, well, the Department of Labor will get an inspector, how does the school district provide that? If the law says the school district has to provide the training, and they don't have someone to provide to do that, that's qualified to do the training, what are they supposed to hire someone, or do they pay for this person from the Department of Labor? Or I'm not quite sure if I understand the mechanism. And I guess I also want to know the line 11 of your bill, in the amendment, talk about the administrator of training shall receive training credit, and I'm not sure if I know what that means, and maybe you could explain that to me.
Mr. Morrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can answer that question. And this should probably clear that whole thing up, because that last line that you had in there, the reason that was put in there to help the schools with just like one or two boiler operators in the schools, because that training, they can train themselves. If they've already got a state boiler license, like a first class or a second or a first class or a chief's, they're qualified to do the training. And so they can do the training for themselves, and most schools will have more than just one boiler operator or custodian, you know, working there. So that's how that training would go, is they would train themselves and train the less senior people, and then their training time will be considered part of the 8 hours required for the bill. So that when the state, if they had to come out and check it, they've got that on record, and they know that these people have been in the boiler room. The problem is we've got chief boiler operators in our state that have been around for 10 years, and they've never been in the boiler room after they've gotten their boiler license. Now, how that's happened, how they've gotten away with that, I don't know. But it's something, you know, we've recognized in our district, and it's something we're trying to work with so that we don't have – our state's been very fortunate. It hasn't had any kind of an accident for 65 years. And that one, I was told, was a minor one. Well, I don't think we ever want a really bad accident to happen in any of our schools. And so this is a big preventive method towards stopping that from happening. And all we're asking is let's get training out there for all boiler operators so that we're able to operate the boilers. So.
Okay. Mr. Morrell and others, there exists a continuing education component to the licensing of engineers, boiler engineers. Are the 8 hours that you have in the amendment, does that coincide with the requirement for renewal of or licensing of engineers? Ms. Anderson, or I'm not sure who.
Thank you. Alicia Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's not been happening. All we've been required to do for our continuing education is making sure that we're signing the boiler log. It's actually, I mean, there's no accountability except for you sign a boiler log. There's nobody to actually check it. And we're asking for the accountability by having the training that everybody is down in their specific boiler room being trained. And it's the chief engineers or the first class, which is going to be in charge of the building. Those are the two licenses that can be in charge of one of our school buildings throughout the state of Minnesota, would do the training and make us accountable for the training and the continuing education.
Okay. Senator Olson and then Senator Hamm.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Senator Stump raises a good point, and I don't know how often that relicensure, does it give any timing? Does that have to be done annually, or is it once every so many years? Or
the subdivision says the commissioner may require continuing education prior to the renewal of any license. Before requiring continuing education, the commissioner shall adopt rules that specify the continuing education requirement.
So Mr. Chairman, we don't know whether those rules have been adopted. But it would seem to me that there needs to be something consistent, since you are asking every school district. Now, of course, that law applies to more than school districts in terms of boiler operation.
Yes.
And licensing.
Yes. We have a new face up here. Maybe we can give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joel Amato, and I'm Chief Boiler Inspector for the state of Minnesota, and I work for the Department of Labor and Industry. And I believe your question on continuing education, the reason that we have that statute to adopt rules for continuing education, because there currently isn't a requirement for boiler operators to receive continuing education. And we are requesting that we have that rulemaking authority so that we can adopt rules for that. The other question, it's in a different bill. And that's just an extension of the one that we were granted last year because if you really want to know the truth, the department doesn't have a really good way of tracking continuing education at this time without causing a burden on the department or the license holder. So we've asked for an extension on that rulemaking authority. The second thing is I'm not aware of any school districts that only have one building. And most school districts have multiple buildings with multiple engineers, with first class and chief operating engineers, licensed engineers. The original purpose behind this is many, many years ago, it took multiple people to operate a boiler. Nowadays, with the updated controls and systems out there, you can do this with one person. When you had multiple people operating a boiler, the education was passed down to the junior engineers from the senior engineers, and we're finding out that that's not happening now because of the newer controls and systems on the boilers.
So Mr. Chairman,
could you just mention the other legislation that's before some committee relating to continuing education? What do they require? What is the requirement, the annual requirement for continuing education?
Currently, there isn't one. We've just requested rulemaking authority to take a look at what the engineers need as far as continuing education goes. I think this bill, though, is a good start to get continuing education for engineers without having the burden on the department to track this. And the burden on the engineers to track this and allow the schools to provide that for the engineers.
Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the challenge here is that there is no structure or framework for what that training should be. And you're, in the education committee, we usually think of curriculum or whatever. It doesn't necessarily have to be to that formality, but there should be some common framework for what would be incorporated in this structure. Now, you have included that there's a couple hours have to be actually occur where it occurs and demonstrating tasks, but there's 8 hours. You know, you've prescribed the hours without any real framework, and that's where I think some criteria for what would meet the requirement, whether it's this law or someday in your rules, should be identified, because you've got a list of approved tasks and you've got that you're going to supply. So somewhere there should be some structure. I don't know if this covers it all. The other, when I look at the administrator of the training and you say the school district shall provide, okay, the training must be administered by an engineer, because the administrator for that building is a principal. So it's a little confusing in terms of the term. So the training will be conducted by it rather than administered? I think there's some wording that enters into some confusion based on titles and tasks within a school district. And how you do accommodate, but you say that Mr. LaMotto, you do believe that there is there are multiple engineers in every single district that would fit the levels of classification, and so someone there would be qualified to do this if in fact they were prepared to do it.
Yes,
Mr. LaMotto. Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Sherman. I'm trying to figure out what exactly this requires a district to do, and I'm not getting it. It says a school district provides a training, but it's really going to be provided by another engineer. It doesn't say that the district has to keep track of it or report it or do anything, and I'm just, what am I missing here? What does this obligate the district to do that it isn't doing now if the training isn't happening because one engineer isn't providing that to the other? That would seem to me to be maybe even within the profession itself, to say let's have rules about how we're going to conduct the profession, and senior people should train junior people, and if there's problems with the school district accommodating that, if they're resistant to saying, well, we're not going to allow training to go on during the workday, then that might be an issue. I don't know. But I'm confused about what this does that would require. I'm not sure what this requires a district to do. And can that be clarified? What are they supposed to do when they get this law in their hands?
I'm not sure who wants to field that question, but that's a good one. Senator Sherrin.
I think there were a couple of questions. What does the bill allow? And then how is the, there was another question about how, what is the tracking or the reporting system that the tasks associated with the operator boilers acceptable for the training must be from the list of approved tasks supplied by the chief? How is that tracked? There were two questions, I think.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sherrin, yeah, but it's mostly, I'm looking at this and, we do a lot of things here where we have requests to say school districts and, do this and do other things. And this is saying the school district should do something, but I'm not sure what it's supposed to do.
Senator Sherrin.
What the bill does, in the most simple terms, is requires the school districts to allow their chief boiler operators, their first-class operators, to use on work time to provide for 8 hours of continuing hands, not necessarily all hands-on. 2 hours of those have to be directly related to the boiler. A year. So the school district's being asked to allow those chief operators, those chief class engineers, during the normal working hours to use their time to participate in this mentoring program. And they will get continuing training credits for that time. And the junior operators are given the 8 hours access to 8 hours of training by these higher-classed boiler operators. And the tasks that have to be covered during that 8 hours are from a list of approved tasks supplied by the chief boiler inspector.
Well, and Mr. Senator Chairman, Hand. I guess I would recommend that we write something that says that, because that's understandable to me. This is not. Something that says school districts shall permit first-class operators to use work time to provide 8 hours of training, at least two of which are in a boiler room, to junior operators. Something like that, that says you have an obligation to provide this opportunity for the senior operators to train junior operators. And the only question I have is if they're not doing that, you know, I don't know if this is something that would typically be done in bargaining, but something like what you said earlier, I could understand that as that's the obligation. So my recommendation would be maybe we need to rework the language to make that say that a little more clearly. Because I can tell you, I wouldn't know what this obligated me to do if I read it.
Okay, Senator Bonhoeff, and then I think we'll maybe see if we can hear from the School Boards Association.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, what I'm wrestling with is that as I read the qualifications of the engineers and it refers to the commissioner, we're not talking about the commissioner of education. We're talking about a different commissioner. And so what is required of an engineer doesn't really have anything to do with school districts. And we have boiler inspectors that inspect schools, but they inspect other things around the state. And so if what we're saying is that boiler inspectors ought to be trained in a real-time, on-the-job experience, just like we've said, now we're moving to that direction with teacher training. We talk about it should be embedded, it should be in the classroom, because that's really where real training happens. And I think that's what you're saying, is that these, you know, these boiler inspectors, they ought to be trained right in there. And so saying that the school district is responsible for that, when really this ought to have something to do with licensure, and, you know, I don't know how the department would manage it, but it seems like we're assigning the job to the wrong entity. I could live with Senator Hand's approach, which would be permissive language, saying the school districts must allow the training to take place, because that's something they can do. And I agree. I think they should allow that. But to have the onus of the training be placed on the school district when it isn't their expertise, this particular statute does not roll up into anything that the Commissioner of Education would be responsible for. So those are my comments.
Maybe just to follow up on that, Mr. DeMano, you said that you have the rule, you need to go through rules to make the requirement or create the requirement for the continuing education. Are you pursuing that at the current time?
Currently, no. We are. That's why we asked for an extension of the rulemaking authority for another 18 months. And it's due to a tracking system for continuing education for 35,000 licensed engineers in this state.
Okay. Ms. Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To answer the question, our senior engineers, which is our chief and our first class, actually are accountable for all of us junior engineers. They actually need to sign an affidavit stating that we've had the appropriate training and that they know that we've had the appropriate training in order to move up and obtain our next licensure. So they are responsible for us, and they actually need to track and make sure that we are getting our training and getting into the boiler rooms and are signing the logs and are knowing what we're doing. And by signing the affidavit, we're saying we have the knowledge, and they're saying they know we have the knowledge. So they're ultimately responsible for us.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator, just a follow-up to that. I appreciate that. What I'm more referring to is the school district management structure. I can understand the senior engineer ought to be responsible for your training, and I can respect that and think that that's a good model.
Okay, maybe we could hear from the School Boards Association. Ms. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we have been trying to work with SCIU on this bill to flesh it out. And on the outset, I want to say running our boilers in a very efficient way is important to us, making sure they're done efficiently. couple thoughts, and I shared some with in an email I had with Senator Sheeran, that I think we need to clarify that you mean public school engineers. As the language is presently written, if you look at the piece that was handed out on the statute, it's not clear that non-public private engineers, boiler engineers, as well as charter school engineers, anyone who monitors a school building might take part in this training. We have to provide it. The other piece I want to share with you is this is negotiated in local agreements. I just randomly picked a school district, the Lakeville School District, and pulled up their custodial agreement, and in there in Section 6, they have a piece on staff development, and that district shall provide in-service and training opportunities for staff on a timely basis. The cost of the training shall be borne by the district. The district shall work with the committee appointed by the union for purposes of developing an in-service training and creating guidelines for reimbursement. A line item for such purposes shall be added to the building and grounds budget of at least $5,000 a year. So this, members, is really a push that is being done locally. I want to remind you that the governor, in his budget allocation for education, certainly had no additional funding. No, the appropriation would be small. When we're trying to reduce mandates and conserve dollars, I'm not sure where districts are going to come up with the freeing up the time of the chief engineer to provide this training. Also, when you provide this training and these folks get another license, they will be making more money at the local district. For teachers, if you want a comparison, they move up steps and lanes by years there, which is afforded to these folks, as well as going back to school for more training. It's sort of similar, I think, to a license. But we don't provide that back-to-school training for teachers. The staff development we provide in the district helps them do their job, but it doesn't move them up the pay scale, too. So please keep those thoughts in mind as you go forward. Once again, you know, if there are ways we can run our boilers better, I would hope we're reaching for those standards right now without this bill. I'm not so sure that this is the way to approach it unless you just want a statewide approach and you want to overrule what's presently in bargaining agreements around the state.
Okay, any questions? What if we, it seems like the 8 hours, does that have any basis for the ongoing training?
8 hours, how did you come up with the 8 hours number?
Mr. Chairman, I believe we came up with 8 hours because that would be a day's worth of training. That is one shift for the engineer.
Although, Mr. Chair, that, you know, that 8 hours could be spread out over the course of the school year. If you look at it, it breaks down to less than 15 minutes a week. But, you know, I think that is something we would be open to amending if need be. We just want to make sure that these operators are as qualified as possible. And then also, I just wanted to respond real quick to the question of the contracts. We would love if we could negotiate every contract to have training programs, like Grace mentioned. Minneapolis School District has one that's far and away better than what we're asking for. They cover all aspects of the job, but that's just not happening.
Senator Stumpf, I think that a couple of the things that we could easily address, I don't know if you want to do it now, but we could certainly change language on line 1.4 that says public school district rather than a school district. We could make a change that the under 1.4 that rather than say the school district shall provide, as Senator Bonoff is focused on, shall allow access to at least hours of training related to what we want to make certain that the language doesn't change so significantly that it takes away the clarity that 8 hours a year needs to be allowed for the chief operating boiler person to give training to these lower level boiler operators in order to sustain safety in these schools for the children who are there.
Okay. I think maybe what we should do is see if we can. Senator Hand had some good ideas about if you read this proposal, you really don't know where you're at unless you're familiar with the testimony that we've heard. And I think what we ought to do is try to either.
We'll do a little work and bring it.
Yeah, maybe what we could do is lay it on the table and just try to do some work to be sure that we understand exactly what we are asking the school districts to do.
Are we up against a wall here in terms of a deadline? We need to get the language resolved. Can we work on it and come back a little bit? Would that be acceptable?
Yeah. We could do that. Mm-hmm. I think from the school district side, obviously the school district's going to have the liability, I would think, that they would have the right engineers who are licensed correctly in those positions of operating the boilers. There was a lawsuit. In fact, it was up in my district where there was an accident, and it wasn't an operating engineer. It was someone who was cleaning the boiler and ended up having a huge lawsuit against the school district, which ended up resulting in us putting liability limits on public bodies. And they actually got around that in the lawsuit the school district that got where it happened was part of a cooperative, and so they were able to sue not only that district but all the districts that were part of that cooperative. So I think it is important, and I hope that the districts are not cutting corners and putting people who are not trained in positions that something could happen. So I think we should try to get the language to clearly spell out what the expectations are on everyone's side.
And
Senator
Mr.
Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think to that point, there were several things that came out in Ms. Kelleher's testimony, too, that is the if the purpose of it is for assuring that they're knowledgeable in the use of the boiler that exists, not necessarily gaining for advancing in terms of licensure. But I think it is important that the rules and some clarity of both licensure and what it takes to advance and what it takes to renew is done at the agency, because that I think is clear. And then at the local level, of course, there's a responsibility that the people that they hire know how to run the equipment that's there. So it's I'm not sure. This does need to be pinned down if we're going to go this route to be something very clear.
And I think one of the problems I have is that we are then setting the 8 hours then becomes the either something the department will see as an amount that should be applied to other licensures, other operators, engineers, and I have no clue as to whether it should be 8 hours or 2 hours. And we, it'd be hard for us. It's the department's responsibility, I think, to figure out what a continuing education requirement should be. And I'm sure this is going to end up having to catch up with the proposal that the department is seeking in terms of the rulemaking extension, I'm guessing, anyway.
And to that point, Mr. Chairman, and in education, we have been moving more to what it is people should be able to know and be able to do, and not necessarily have it measured by hours, because some may learn it very quickly, others may need more time and some different approaches. So those are all aspects that I think make it rather difficult. Because I think if any of you have been through sessions where you sit and listen to some discussion on any given point and move on to the rest of life, it doesn't last very long. So you can have instruction that somebody talks at you, or you can look at some pictures, and it may not qualify as education, much less training.
Maybe we can direct staff to work up some language, and maybe we would have it before 10 o'clock. So that we can, because what we'll do at 10 o'clock is to adjourn the policy committee and then move into the education finance committee. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin?
Could I just make one comment? I think that somehow it should be clear in the language that the training is not necessarily, not designed to move them up to a different class of license, which also means they move up to a different level of pay. But that it would be for training in the license that they're at and the operate and the job that they're expected to do at that level, because I don't know that it's appropriate for the district to have to provide the training to go to a new class. I think that's something that an employee should usually attain on their own, and so especially since it doesn't involve a higher level of pay.
Okay. All right, any other comments? And then what we'll do is lay Senate File 1189 as amended on the table, and then we'll pick it up in half hour. So.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Olson moves 1189 as amended to be laid on the table. Next we have...
I just read through this.
Senator Salzman. Senate File 567.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And we've been talking about training and standards, and I think this is a great follow-up. This is a bill, Senate File 567, is on CPR and AED instruction, and really setting clear expectations for what kind of standard we should use in teaching these life-saving techniques. Now,
Senator Salzman, do you have any
Yes, I do have an amendment, okay. Mr. Chair. Excuse me. I have the A3 amendment, and the A3 amendment is very critical because it takes the fiscal note off of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Salzman, for offering that amendment. It's being handed out right now. You can go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. One of the things that we know is that when a person has a cardiac arrest, that having someone there, and that's why training by both the American Heart Association and Red Cross is so important, because we can have tremendous medical facilities in our community, but if there isn't someone there who recognizes the signs and symptoms and can act immediately, the chances of later survival really decrease. And prior to becoming a legislator, I was a basic life supporter at University Hospital and did that for a number of years and in my other life. Continue to do that because I think it's really important that we train people. But they need to have the correct standards. So what I'd like to do is I have two survivors here today, and they're going to really talk about why this is so important and why when we teach CPR and the use of the AED, an automatic external defibrillator, why you need to know how to do it right. And so with me today, first of all, I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and I know we're really on a time thing, but I want you to hear their stories. So,
thank you, Senator Salzman. If you would just give your name for the record, please.
Sure, Dale Wakasugi.
Okay. Please go ahead.
I'm age 51, and I am a sudden cardiac arrest survivor. A little over a year ago, on December 13th, 2007. Excuse me, while refereeing a varsity boys basketball game at Fridley High School, I went down with 5 minutes to go, a sudden cardiac arrest, And a 16-year-old student from the high school came running out of the stands and immediately started the resuscitation process with CPR. Three rounds of CPR, no pulse, unconscious, not excuse me, not breathing. Somebody grabbed an AED, and on the first shock, shocked me back to life. Sudden cardiac arrest kills people, and it kills them quickly. And without her quick response, I would not be here today. The key to survival is time to defibrillation. My total save from start to finish took place in less than 3 minutes. Therefore, I didn't suffer any of the after effects of brain damage and that type of thing. I now work for a distributor selling AEDs, and AED deployment in the state of Minnesota with the high schools is very good. 90% of the high schools have at least one AED, but there's more to an AED program than just the AED itself. AEDs alone are not enough. To make a successful AED program, you have to have training, CPR training and AED training, as well as some type of management program to monitor the expired batteries and pads. So you need the AED, you need the training, and you need the management program. And so Again, as a survivor, I feel very lucky to be here today to speak on behalf of the Sudden Cardiac Arrest Group, as well as a colleague of mine with the Sudden Cardiac Arrest Group, and a bill like this to be passed in the schools. The schools have been very good about securing AEDs, but there's been a big discrepancy and inconsistency in training. And so if we can pass this bill to help educate and train on a consistent basis throughout the school system, that would be perfect.
Very good, Mr. Chair. And now I have Gene Johnson, who is from New Brighton, Minnesota.
Yes, I'm Gene Johnson from New Brighton, Minnesota. I'm a sudden cardiac arrest survivor, 9/11/2002. It all happened, like with Dale, in about 3 or 4 minutes. It's all serendipity and miraculous, really. We're part of that 5% nationally that has survived, and it's all by serendipity up until now. We want to change that. We got a group of about 80 of us now. I gathered together since 2002. I'm the chairperson of 80 survivors. Dale is included. I try to hunt anyone I can find to join the group, and we celebrate life every minute. And what I learned about sudden cardiac arrest and defibrillators will take an hour and a half to tell you, but I'll tell you in a few minutes that ventricular fibrillation, the electrical failure of the heart, is not a heart attack. It's a sudden cardiac arrest, and it's devastating. It kills us within 0 to 8 minutes. Some people go up as high as 8 minutes with the fibrillation, but you have the defibrillator right here, which is simply a shock, and it's a wonderful little machine that thinks for itself, and it will only work with a defibrillating heart. You can't hurt it or misuse it or do anything. It's a wonderful machine. And I worship this little thing, and we want them everywhere. We just love them. But Dale is right. You cannot just save with a defibrillator alone. You need CPR. The American Heart Association now has a CPR-only time kit that they put out for $29.99 now. And it's a little Recessi Annie in here and a little CD that trains just about anybody. So from 8 years old, 10 years old on up, we can use this. We use this in Fridley to train Lindsay Paradise that saved Dale. So it works. It actually works. So if the Red Cross and the Heart Association gets out and pushes this, we work with Fridley, Blaine, and a little private school in Excelsior. And we will nonstop teach kids. And we start with middle school kids, and it's being done. This afternoon, I'm meeting with Dr. Lick and Dr. Kevin Leary on Take Heart Minnesota. It's a takeoff of St. Cloud, Take Heart St. Cloud, and Take Heart Anoka. And what it is we want to train everybody in the state of Minnesota about CPR and AEDs and sudden cardiac arrest and teaching them about what this really is. And, of course, we have cardiologists working like Dr. Ramol in Mercy Hospital that's working on the preventative side and what we can do not to have so many sudden cardiac arrests, because I ask them, why? Why me? I have a good heart. I have a good body. And it says, we don't know. Idiopathic. Well, I said, find out. So they're working on it. But in the meantime, we can educate the public about this dangerous little phenomena. And it's a wonderful, wonderful machine. Like I told you, I can tell you miracle stories in the 4 minutes that happened to all of us. We're just by luck here. So I'll go on and on. I'll never stop until Senator Chair Salzman takes me away. But anyway, whatever you can do to teach and educate, follow the guidelines of Red Cross and American Heart. They are changing rapidly, and the time from 4 hours is going down to about 2 hours now.
So, Senator,
thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I think you could get people really excited. It's. Would you mind telling me what school, little school in Excelsior, is private school is involved with this?
That was in Excelsior, St. John's.
Okay, thank
St. John's.
You.
We hope to get a DFib in there. We educated three classes.
Very good. Thank you.
Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Salzman? Do we have any defibrillators in our building?
I was wondering, there should be one in here.
Well, that's a good question,
Senator
Mr.
Salzman.
Chair. I believe that when someone calls 911, that we have a team, that our security force comes with a defibrillator. I don't think we have them around the building, whereas you see them in a lot of facilities now sort of available. But again, and this is not a mandate. As you will notice on line 1.5, the amendment, it's school districts are encouraged to include CPR and automatic external defibrillator instruction. But if they do, they must use the training that's either been developed by American Heart, American Red Cross, or a nationally recognized evidence-based guideline, which really drives us. And American Heart Association usually does all the research to set the standards and then works with American Heart. I've been an instructor since 1978, I believe. And in working with students as you do this, it's really about you can do this. And the student who came out of the stands had an instructor at some point that said, minutes count, go for it. And I think that that's what's really important here is really making sure. And I know we have people here from the American Heart Association and the Red Cross as well, but I know our time is tight. And I just want to tell you, in hearing the testimony, watching your faces, of this is a good thing, and we need to pass good things that really serve students, but also then how we train our students and how that goes back into their communities and to save lives.
Okay. did we take action on the amendment?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. This bill in the House went straight to the floor.
Okay.
Did we do that?
We didn't take action on that.
Did we do the amendment?
No.
All right.
We did not, I don't think, vote on the amendment,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Salzman, is there anyone else? Oh, yeah, we do have. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carrie Carlson, and I am representing the American Red Cross chapters here in Minnesota. We were hoping to have actually a couple of other people here, but as you may have heard, we're a little busy with a few floods going on right now. And very much appreciate your support and understand we're under a time crunch here, but this is something, as personally, I have lost two grandfathers to sudden cardiac arrest, and are very much thankful for these two gentlemen to be here. But what we know is that 300,000 Americans suffer from sudden cardiac arrest every year, and less than 10% of them are going to survive. And so think of how many people you know that have been affected by this. And what we do know is that if you do have that cardiac chain of survival, if that happens as quickly as possible, which is that, you know, early activation of EMS, prompt CPR by someone who has been trained, and defibrillation, that survival rate can go way up. And we know that when we train people at the Red Cross, it's building that confidence. It's you know, they know how to do it. It's like riding a bike once you get gone through that training, as Senator Salzman knows. So what we're really encouraging everyone to do is to really support something that is going to save lives. Teach people from when they're in high school that it's automatic. Just like right now, we're hoping that everyone uses their seatbelts. We hope everyone, you know, it's automatic. Of course, you're trained in first aid and CPR and AED, and that that everyone would be supportive of this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I realize that many of the Red Cross people are up in my district and my part of the state. I talked to the mayor of Rosa this morning, and they just narrowly got by without being flooded. It was actually, I think he said, or the mayor said, it was the third highest flood event in history. And the work that's been done in Roseau prevented everything except the last segment that is a dike around, or is a diversion around the east side of Roseau from getting wet. And they would have lost the Polaris plant and the whole, you know, west side of town if they did not have the work that's been already done. So he was looking out the window. He was up all last night looking out the window, and he said, "There go the Red Cross trucks." So, all right, Senator Saltzman, do you want to?
I'd like to move the. Have we passed the A3 amendment yet?
We haven't. Okay. So Senator Saltzman moves the A3 amendment that the members have before you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Is there anyone else that wants to comment on this or any questions? If not, Senator Saltzman, you can.
I would like to move Senate File 567 and may it go to the floor, Mr. Chair?
Sure. As amended.
Senator Saltzman moves the A3 amendment or the Senate File 567 as amended and re-referred to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
And thank you very much, Mr. Wakasui and Mr. Johnson and Red Cross. Next, we have Senator Dibble, Senate File 549.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Senator Dibble. We have a limited amount of time, and if we could zero in on the education.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate File 549 is a bill that touches on a lot of subjects. The portion that brings us to this committee today starts on page 3 with Section 4, as well as Section 5 that starts on page 3 and continues to page 4 and kind of reaches a little bit into page 5. But, Mr. Chair, I do have the A7 amendment, which changes the provisions a little bit in Section 3 if we want to talk about that a little bit. First, I can talk about it. This is not the Committee of Origins. So.
Senator Bonhoff moves the A3 or A7 amendment.
Excuse me, A7. What is that? Yeah, A7.
Okay. And,
Mr. Chair, like Senator Saltzman indicated, this takes the cost off. There's no fiscal note to the state, but there might have been some implication for cost to local governments. But in speaking with Grace Schwab, we came up with this amendment, and she says this removes local costs as well.
Okay. Could you just give a very, very brief overview so the committee members understand what the proposal
sure. Yes, Mr.
does.
Chair. The when school districts are contemplating the renovation of a school because, you know, it needs a, you know, significant capital work of some sort or another, the Department of Education has a manual that the Department of Education has the commissioner has right to review those decisions and has the right to make some requirements around that. And they use this document called the Guide for Planning School Construction Projects in Minnesota. This is just a small piece of it. And if the renovation approaches 60% of the cost of the school, the commissioner can say, oh, you can't renovate that school. You have to go build a new school. Likewise, as they're contemplating the new school site, the commissioner looks to this guide, which is just a guide. It's not even in rules or anything. And then the commissioner can require minimum acreage for that school. And this is not based on any particular science, and it's you know, it hasn't been updated in quite some time. And in fact, all around the country and national organizations that look at this issue are moving away from those standards of minimum renovation costs. It allows schools to preserve historic schools. It allows schools to save costs. It allows schools to make some determination for themselves what's best in terms of the location of the school. Likewise, with this acreage, that's driving all kinds of other decisions that create a great deal of cost, bringing roads, bringing sewer, bringing utilities out to. This is particularly easy to envision in smaller communities when a school is then forced to be built outside of town, and then, of course, that creates all of those associated costs that the school district doesn't have control over, but the taxpayers do have to foot. So that this proposal removes some of those standards, at least triggers for automatic denial of the school board's decisions.
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman, a little information for members. The Guide for Planning and School Construction in Minnesota is a document that the was developed by the Department of Education as a reflection of good fiscal planning and good planning for school construction in the state. It was developed in about 1996 timeframe. There have been, as I understand it, some minor adjustments along the way. Senator Dibble speaks to the 60% criteria that is now codified in this bill as a reason to prevent a school a commissioner from issuing a negative review and comment. The department currently uses that 60% number as a guide. It's not a hard and fast rule. It's my understanding they tend to look to the 60% number on a renovation to say, if the renovation costs more than 60%, then the school district they require the school district to issue a board ruling that they have considered replacement, because once you move past that 50% threshold, the guide suggests that it may be better fiscal policy to consider a brand new building. And I think what this bill would do is suggest or would require that that they can't use that rule any longer. And so I think that that's the issue for committee members to think about: is it good? Does this make sense to make broad policy across the state to say that the 60% rule that they have used as a guide, and again, not a mandate, no longer makes sense?
Okay, Senator Saltzman.
Yes. Well, on this point, Mr. Chair, we had a good discussion yesterday during our charter school bill. And I think this somewhat relates to that, is that we've had some discussions with charter schools and lease aid, that in the bill that was passed out of committee yesterday, that when a charter school, that some of the new provisions would be that before a charter school could apply to the commissioner for lease aid for a new construction, that they be able to show that there wasn't available space for either renovation or a building for purchase. And because I think that we've also heard that how do we use state dollars, and so I think there's a good discussion here of how do we use existing buildings rather than build new, and so I think it's a good discussion. So I really do think it's worth us looking at and also considering in light of that discussion we had yesterday.
Okay. Senator Koch, did you have a question?
Oh, no, Mr. Chair, I would pretend to agree with you, Senator Saltzman, that we should have the discussion. I'm just not sure if we're ready to codify this into state statute. And I'm kind of wondering, Senator Dibble, have you considered just working with the Department of Education on the guidelines and going from there? What's the reason for putting this into statute? That's pretty...
Well,
Senator Dibble?
Trying to reduce mandates and requirements and so... Go ahead.
Right. And Mr. Chair, that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to create more flexibility for school districts to be able to make these determinations. We're trying not to foreclose opportunities for school districts. For example, the ability for schools to perhaps use non-traditional structures that already exist. Department of Education and Mr. Bailey here has had more direct conversations. We have been talking with them, and they have no objection to doing this. And this has been, frankly, the trend in the rest of the country is to not create these kind of somewhat dated and somewhat arbitrary standards of minimum acreage requirements and thresholds on at least the strict threshold on the renovation costs.
And so, then
I think I view this as creating more flexibility. And they rely on this manual, which doesn't have and in talking to the School Boards Association, they're a little nervous too, because you know, this is a guide, it's a manual, as Mr. Nauman described, but it doesn't have the force and effect of rules, yet it's used in that capacity. School districts feel like, you know, when the commissioner looks to this guide and then issues their ruling, then they're bound to that. This creates a better conversation between school districts and the Department of Education.
Okay. Is there anyone from the department that, and we also want to hear from the school board's association too. Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, a couple concerns I have with the language as it's stated. When we say the commissioner may evaluate the proposals but may not issue a negative or unfavorable review and comment under the section for a school facility based on acreage, I'm wondering if it shouldn't say may not issue a negative or unfavorable review and comment under this section solely based on acreage. You know, so we're saying that it, you know, it shouldn't only be based on acreage. I think we don't want to tell the commissioner what they can or cannot do, but we want to tell the commissioner there ought to be more to it than just an acreage question. That would be one suggestion I would have. The other thing is I am concerned about saying that the commissioner's evaluation must not be based upon renovation costs approaching 60%. I think it's important for the commissioner to let the school district know and to have some kind of dialogue around, gee, if it's going to be 60% of a new building, you know, have you considered replacement? I don't see, I guess, why we wouldn't allow that flexibility to instruct a commissioner not to have that conversation when really they don't require a new building in law now. It just triggers the conversation. And why we would I don't understand why we wouldn't want that to trigger a conversation. Perhaps the old school district has, or the old building has, you know, asbestos, you know, potential, or it's drafty, there's this and there's that, and that they could actually, you know, buy for nearly the same cost, have a modern, energy-efficient new building. So it seems to me that we're not gaining anything with that last statement.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear from the department because I know one of my school districts has gone through this, and I'm not aware that the department has come forth very emphatically with these. It's kind of a guidance thing rather than telling them what to do now. But I would like to hear how that is being used and applied if somebody is here from the department.
Okay.
And then maybe Senator Roebling, you had a question too. Okay. All right. Please give your name for the record.
My name is Brianna Chambers. I work at the Minnesota Department of Education, and we're working on getting someone up here to talk about facilities. So in a few minutes, we could possibly have someone to be able to answer questions about facilities.
All right. Thank you. Maybe, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that in my area, where we're building a new school every other year, that our districts kind of do believe that the acreage guidelines are set in law. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, that's not a big enough parcel to build a new school on. And I don't like most of Senator Dibble's bill, but this is one section I do kind of like, because it has pushed our new schools, our new facilities, further and further out away from the residential areas. Now, typically after the school gets built there, the residential area develops around it. But it seems like as far as having students walk to school or having quick access, they're out in fields far from the main development in the community because of the acreage requirement and because the school district is having a harder and harder time finding a big enough parcel to put that in. And so I do think that a lot of districts are taking it like law now, and I wouldn't mind making it clear that it is not.
Okay. Senator Tresray and then Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chairman, it seems that Senator Dibble brought a witness to talk about this, and he
been eager to respond to some of our questions, and we haven't given him a chance to speak, and I would like to see if we could do that.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff, and then we'll get to your
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if it wouldn't be possible to somehow take this section and lay it on the table so that we can continue to work on it and consider it for the omnibus bill, because I think people do like it. I'm getting concerned that this is our last hearing and it is our the rest of the time we have for early childhood education, which we haven't even begun to talk about. And so I was wondering if that would be possible. And because I know there's a lot of issues that should be flushed out in this.
That's right. I know I'm conscious of that, too. Let's hear the testimony and see if somebody from the department is here. Please give your name.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Bailey. I represent Dows and Friends of Minnesota. There's a statewide membership organization working in communities all around the state on issues of community growth. I'm not going to testify due to the time constraints, but I want to answer a couple of questions. And specifically, due to the busy schedule, we did not have a couple of testifiers come from Morris and Mankato. They had some really very compelling stories. The woman from Morris, Laura Carrington, who's a school board member there, former teacher, and the person in Mankato as well, where these sort of guidelines do, on planet Earth, become real-world guidelines. I mean, people do interpret them. They have to build a school further out there due to the 60% rule, which is the story in Morris, and the minimum acreage rule in Mankato. So, unfortunately, I appreciate the Senator Koch about, should we maybe take a step back, do a more comprehensive look? But comprehensive looks can take so long, and there's such a compelling need, we believe, to kind of just deal with this one issue to really provide more local flexibility, because this has just been the trend around the country as well, where we really feel these minimum acreage requirements and the 60% rule just don't serve a public need anymore. So that's our position, and I'll limit my testimony to that just to answer the questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is it Mr. Bailey?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Mr. Chair. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Can we hear Senator Folby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would concur with Senator Roebling, I believe it was, about the greater Minnesota. They do, I believe, think this is law. We dealt with this in Princeton. We were looking at parcels miles away from our two main campuses, which would have added huge implications. So I think it's maybe educating, but I think it's definitely something we need to look at for greater Minnesota.
Okay. Could we ask the School Boards Association?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Senator Terezre?
Well, she walks to the table. We were wondering, Senator Koch and I are talking about maybe the only thing that we need to do is add a word.
It's up to you.
Which in 9.17, two words actually, 1.7 and 1.13, that will be only or solely.
Senator Terezre, could you give us the page number and line?
Sorry, I'm working out of the...
We're on the amendment.
Oh, you're on the amendment.
The A7, Mr. Chairman.
Did we move the amendment?
No.
So I don't know if the author is okay with that, but we will only be adding that word then.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble?
I'm comfortable with that change. If that, I think it's a good change, A. B, if that's a change that makes Senator Bonhoff happy,
yes.
And keeps my bill moving.
Yeah, yeah, we just built on Senator Bonhoff's. That was her idea.
Absolutely.
Okay. Once again, on the change, would you repeat the change, Senator Terezre?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the change will be in line 1.7, facility based solely on acreage. And 1.13 must not be based solely on renovation.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we're going to have a chance to hear from the school board, but I like the idea that somebody said that I would like to move that this amendment be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Let's deal.
But that's not to say that whatever happens with the bill, but I think that you don't know the total future of your bill either. We might be better off with having at least one provision in our that we can agree on in our education bill.
Okay, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nolan.
Just to add to Senator, what I understand to be Senator Olson's motion, you may want to include the provisions of Senator Dibble's bill, sections 4 and 5. Those, I think this is an amendment to those provisions, so you may want to, if what you want to do is to lay it on the table for inclusion, I think it would make sense to include those sections as well.
Just sections 4 and 5 of the bill.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
We have Torres Rea amendment.
Okay.
We voted on
it. Vote on the Torres Rea?
No.
We took action on the 87 amendment.
We did, but we haven't voted on it.
Right. Okay.
The Torres Rea amendment.
On Senator Torres Rea's amendment to the amendment, as stated, adding solely on lines 1.7 and also on 1.13 after based. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct, Mr. Chair.
On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. And then let's hear from the School Boards Association then.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. I want to say it's been sort of a happily surprised morning. It's wonderful to start out with a bill with Senator Dibble and actually come to a really good conclusion. We actually think a lot of the major cost drivers in here that we're going to increase costs for referendums on the studies have been taken out. Certainly the not solely based gives us the flexibility at the local level to address those as meets our community's needs. So I really appreciate it. And as Senator Phoebe alluded to, a lot of these requirements in law districts feel they really have to follow. And with this flexibility, it certainly lets us bring into more ideas into play.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman. All right, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that sections 4 and 5 of Senate File 549 as amended be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
I think you probably first have to vote on the full amendment.
No.
But then I was going to ask if it is at all possible to both lay these provisions on the table and keep the section in my bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, I was not excluding the other. I just wanted to do this first.
Okay.
I don't know if it has to be incorporated before it's done, or if that would be, if you want that motion first of incorporating this motion and then the movement to take sections 4 and 5.
Senator Olson moves to amend Senate File 549 with the A7 amendment as amended. Okay, everyone clear? Right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
And Mr. Chair, I'm happy to also leave these sections in this committee to work more on it if this committee wants to work more on it. I'd also like to carry it along with the rest of my bill at the same time, too.
Okay. Is there anyone from the Department of Education here? Okay, if you haven't been here for the full discussion, it relates to please go ahead and
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. I believe there is a fiscal note that's either being worked on or completed on this.
Mr. Chairman, there was a fiscal note completed that spoke to a levy cost that was unmeasurable. And I did ask the department to go back and see whether or not they could apply a range. Sometimes when it's unmeasurable, they can at least say, here's an upper bound and a lower bound. And I haven't heard a response back on that yet.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, members, with respect to on the amendment, item B, my recollection from the fiscal note is that our program finance unit did have some concerns, which I think will be addressed by Senator Olson's amendment, basing it just on solely. on the renovation costs up to 60%.
Okay. All right. So we don't have a completed fiscal note. Do you know how quickly we can get it? Or?
Mr. Chair and members, I will contact our program finance division and ask them to get you something in for sure by tomorrow.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Prioritize this.
So,
Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, I think...
we took out Section C, which Ms. Kelleher had indicated was the... You don't see it because it's not in front of you. There was another section on the previous version of this amendment, which was the A6, which is what the school boards felt like created costs at the local level. As Ms. Kelleher testified, she believes those cost drivers have been removed now.
So, Mr. Chairman, to the extent that if hypothetically the fiscal note were to come back with a continued levy impact, even with the amendment, then I think the tax committee would need to see this bill as well because it would be a levy impact.
Well, Mr. Chair, we've been to every other committee in the Senate, so we can sure go to the tax committee too.
If it didn't come back with that, Mr. Chairman, then I don't think the tax committee, or, unless there's something else in the bill that they have jurisdiction over. So I think that that's the choice.
Senator Dibble, Senator Bach got in touch with me this morning and said that he did want to see this provision.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chair.
And
he sent me a memo a couple weeks ago.
In Senator Olson's motion, we will take and retain it for the Omnibus Education Finance Bill. And we can, if we pass your bill out separately, then I think the referral will be to the Committee on Taxes.
Mr. Chair, we need to get to finance first.
Okay, then it would be to finance, but then finance would have to.
Yeah, we'll get it to taxes. I'm on taxes. I rarely defy the tax committee chair.
All right.
Although that's been known.
Okay,
that.
So I think. Senator Olson moved. Was there any other information that you'd like to share with us or not? I guess until we have a fiscal reply, we don't know.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, my review of the fiscal note indicated there was some concern about wood. There was some concern as to whether or not it would be more costly to renovate an existing facility that might be so... that might be in a condition that it's not prudent from a fiscal perspective, and I'm sure Mr. Nauman saw that information
right.
as well.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, by keeping it here for possible inclusion, we will have some more time to look at it and alter it if needed. But I'm not moving to delete it out of your bill.
Thank you.
I think we can send it. Senator Dibble, I think if we end up with a fiscal note that we have to deal with later on, we may have to make some adjustments as we move forward. So
I will certainly come back, Mr. Chair, when the committee wants to take this discussion up again.
Okay. All right. And with the understanding, because we're going to be very shortly delving into how we can come up with our portion of the budget balancing. So, all right, on Senator Olson's motion, and I think the first motion would be to we adopted the A7 as amended, would be to pass. Bill Ryan.
I just want to move those two sections on the table without deleting them. I'm not deleting them from his bill, but I just move those two sections to be laid on the table.
All right. Senator Olson moves to lay sections 4 and 5 as amended on the table. Any discussion on that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion is adopted. So Senator Olson moves that Senate file
no.
5.
Huh? No, I'm not moving the bill.
Oh, okay. Senator Rummel. Senator Rummel moves that Senate file 549 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to finance. Any other discussion on this? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion does prevail. And this then would be in finance, full finance.
Yes, we have to visit a couple of committees in finance. Kind of a wide-ranging bill, touches a lot of subjects. So we're getting around the Senate. So. I think by the time we get to the floor, if we get to the floor, everyone will have actually had a discussion about this bill.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
News adjourned. Oh, Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf. I think there is a new amendment prepared, and we have a few oral amendments to the new amendment.
Okay, members, if we can hang in there just a little bit longer here. We have the A3 amendment is being handed out. Senator Sharon, or maybe staff, whoever. Who wants to explain it? Maybe Senator Hand.
Yes, Senator Hand.
Senator Hand.
He's very helpful.
Would you like to explain the
what
language?
I like to, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try to explain this. I think, as you remember, members, we had a discussion about the bill that Senator Sharon brought, and there was some confusion, at least on my part, maybe others shared it, just what this did to what this obligation was to school districts. So, with the help from council, we have now two paragraphs. One would be this is the obligation: school districts shall allow boiler training, as it says, and by whom and under what conditions. And I think the important thing is to say that it has to take place during the licensee's normal working hours, which is the point that the author was trying to prevail upon us to accept. And the second paragraph is really identical language from the bill, original bill, that just talks about how the training, what are the elements of the training. And so that is the change in the language. I like this form better. I'm not certain if I like the whole bill yet, but I like that at least it's clear to me that what we're doing is asking the school district to accept and essentially mandate this training to occur during working hours, and that's what it does. So I don't know if anybody wants to raise any questions, but I think it's a lot clearer in my opinion.
Okay, thank you, Senator Hand. Any other discussion on this? There's the 2 hours of the retraining required, learning training, shall be in the boiler room. That's a change?
No, Mr. Chairman, that's in the original language. All of paragraph B is identical language from the original bill.
Okay.
Except for the letter A.
Any other?
thank you, Senator Stumpf. I don't know how you want to proceed with this, but there's a couple of language changes that maybe will have to be amendments to the amendment. But on line 1.5, we should say licensed first class or chief engineer. So it just the wording is off there a little bit. And then on section 1.11, to respond to one of the issues about administration, we should change, instead of the administrator, we should say the licensed engineer providing the training shall receive. That removes that administrator term that could be confusing. So those would be amendments to the amendment whenever you want to.
All right. Senator Who's
Mr. Chairman, can I just offer that as the amendment to the amendment, or incorporate it in the amendment we're offering?
Okay. Senator Hand would incorporate that into the amendment. Somebody
needs to offer the amendment.
We didn't offer it. So, Senator Hand, do you want to offer the A3 amendment as we changed it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I will offer that amendment.
Okay. On the amendment, any further discussions, Ms. Gallagher?
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the School Boards Association. I wondered if the committee would consider during...
Could you please move the mic right in front of you, please?
If you would consider in this redraft of the amendment to make it clear that it's public schools and not non-public private charter schools. You want them, clearly they should be school district employees. So it's not open to all school boiler operators unless that's what you're intending.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, we go to great lengths to say that our charter schools are public schools, so I would not be comfortable excluding charter schools if we feel this is something we should do for our public schools. So I'd be comfortable with including the word a public school district, but I would not be comfortable excluding charters.
That was our intention. In the speed of doing this, we left that out. And my apologies.
Senator Hand includes after district or charter.
Mr. Chairman, I think what the what Ms. Kelleher would ask for is that we would incorporate the word public before school on line 1.4, and then for Senator Bonhoeff, we should say or charter school, since charter schools are not typically considered to be districts. So it would be a public school district or charter. Or charter school shall allow.
Okay. On that, Senator Rummel.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Roebling and I were just asking, when a charter school leases a school that's not owned by the district, who's responsible for the boiler? And
charter school.
The building owner. Maybe. The building owner.
The question that was raised was when a charter school leases a building, and
not necessarily a school building either.
Right.
If you lease a building that you are totally in charge of that building, I would that would be one issue. Another one would be is if you leased a portion of a building. And somebody else leased another portion of the building. How does that work out? Senator Hand and then Senator...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if... that's a good point, but if the language says that this has to be done by a licensed first class or chief engineer, presumably the charter school wouldn't have those positions if that were the case, so then this may not apply. Right. So it may only apply under those conditions, I guess. I would read it that way. I don't know if I would be correct, but if you don't have those people... because you're not taking care of a boiler, then how could you do the training?
Okay.
That's right. All right, Senator Salzman.
And on that point, Mr. Chair, perhaps if we leave it a school district, and then as we come back to our omnibus bill, because I think that within charter school you know what kind of things they also have to do, we could look at some language in the omnibus bill that would specifically say a charter school that, you know, controls the boilers would be required to meet Section 123B148. So maybe we would reference it and not get caught up in that discussion day so we can move this bill.
So if Mr. Chairman and Senator Salzman's point,
Senator Hand.
And I would modify my incorporated offer to not include the charter school, but
that's
just
fine.
Public school district.
All right. So we're back to the original.
Yes.
All right. On that, amendment, Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chairman, I didn't catch all of the last sentence amendment, but the licensed engineer providing the training shall receive training credit for time spent conducting training under this section. Administering could mean a lot more hours than Or you could conjure.
Providing, conducting.
Conducting training under
we
the section.
We're trying to fix that, yes.
Thank you.
Right. I'm sure that's what Senator Hahn said.
Can I incorporate that, Senator Hahn?
Yes, I will incorporate conducting on line 12 in place of administrating.
Senator Hahn incorporates that into the amendment. Any other discussion on this? If not, all those in favor of the A3 amendment as amended.
And amended.
Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion is adopted. All right. So now we have Senate File 1189
as amended.
And that can, I think, if it isn't stopped by, you know, asked for by other committees, can go to the floor. So Senator Clark moves that Senate File 1189 as amended. Yes, Senator Sharon?
I don't know if this makes a difference, but in the House, this language has been incorporated in the
housekeeping bill for Department of Labor.
Housekeeping bill for the Department of Labor. Does that make any difference?
No. It'll eventually find its way someplace, I'm
all right.
sure.
All right.
It's not a position.
So I'd be.
I'm guessing that whoever chairs the Department of Labor will probably want to see this. Two somewhere along the line because they're working on extending the rules and they're going to say something to do with licensed engineers and they're going to pull it into their committee, I'm guessing.
Senator, some just a clarification on that issue. We did some clarification on Senator Roebling's question about the movement through the licensure system. There's nothing in this bill that relates to what will occur for a person's moving to the next license step. The requirements for the next step are years experience. It doesn't mean hands-on experience and a test. So regardless of whether this passes or not, there's no relationship between this and the movement in a step process.
Okay. All right. On Senator Clark's motion that this 1189 has amended the passed and sent to the floor. Any other discussion? Senator or Ms. Kelleher?
Mr. Chairman and members, Grace Kelleher with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I just want to reiterate there is a local district cost for this training, and as we're looking at cutting school districts, there doesn't seem to be any funds to pay for this, and though it's not much money, folks, and I can't argue with the quality or need of the training. Senator Sharon, nice job pointing that out. Really, the dollars this year are going to be tight. So I ask you to consider, you know, making this part of the Safe Schools Levy. If this is an important concept you want to see schools doing, putting it under staff development as part of the 2% set aside that must be spent here. But there's some other ways to do it where it's not just one more financial burden in a year. We're going to see unprecedented cuts for public schools.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, to that point, we did have some discussion out in the hall. We were trying to clarify this language. And as I understand, the people, the advocates for this are arguing that this really should not have a cost because it's part of the normal workday. It's discretionary cost. But I appreciate the point that Senator or Ms. Keller is making. And what would be the process to get this to be included as part of the staff development set-aside? Is there something you'd have to do to designate that, or does this automatically fall under that? Or I'm not sure. I mean, if there is a cost, I guess is the point. If there's concern about cost and we're not going to have funds to pay for it, if we say, well, this could be, if to what extent there are costs, they could be covered under the 2% staff development set-aside. Do we have to specify that, or would that be simply assumed by the part of the district?
Senator Hand, I think we have staff working on both sides of me here, trying to figure that out. If you had discussions in the hall on the exact cost, I guess, Ms. Keller, You'd think with all the testimony we had, we'd understand this thing. But when it says a school district shall allow boiler training, do you see that as a cost or a, you know, to some degree we want licensed, adequately licensed engineers. When school districts hire someone, do they hire someone and then the engineer gets trained for a position? And that seemed to be the testimony of Mr. Morrell. But the way it seems like the school district would want to be protected with the right licensed person in the position they're operating in, I would think. But Ms. Gallagher?
Mr. Chairman, I believe school districts fill positions as needed, and by law we're already required to have a chief boiler engineer, and certainly as people progress through the system, I like to equate it to teachers and getting licensed in different areas. You know, we encourage them to go out and get that licensure, and it's a good thing for school districts to have multiple licensures, but it is a qualification if we ask you to teach second grade and you go out and get additional licensures. It enhances your career as a teacher, and the school district doesn't reject that. So this is, we feel what we need, and as the people grow in the area, we allow that to happen. And the cost we're associating it is just their time not spent on their present duties. So you're asking them to find 8 hours during the day to devote to this specific issue, and I'm assuming they're not, that they're working during that time presently.
10 hours per year.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Norwood.
I've checked the Reserve for Staff Development statute, and although it doesn't say licensed teacher personnel, it's clearly designed. We have a list of categories of things that it can be spent on. Staff development plans, including challenging instructional activity experiences under section, curriculum development, other in-service education, teacher workshops, teacher conferences, et cetera. I think if the desire is to allow the staff development money to be used for that purpose, you may want to instruct us to draft language to that effect for the omnibus bill.
And Mr. Chairman, and maybe we could do that and say any mandated training would then be qualified under that 2%.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hand, we could certainly do that. I think that it's a broader policy issue that we may want to actually bring maybe some draft amendment language in for you all to have a discussion about, because I think you may discover that there's other mandated training that would, in a sense, dilute the revenue, and maybe that's okay. But I think you may want to discuss that.
What I hear is that this is not a mandated training. No, but I mean, from the engineer's perspective, it's not mandated. That's what I hear from the School Boards Association, is that employee that they hired would not have to continue receiving training. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you are correct.
Right.
Mr. Chair, like
and what we're
question.
Attempting to do is to require it as a mandate so that the cost would be picked up by the school district.
Mr. Chairman, I think
Senator
you should
Rummel?
Just...
Mr. Chair, can we call a question? It would be great if we could spend as much time on little kids today.
Yes, this is getting
weird. All right. I think since this is carrying, all right. On the motion, I'm not sure who made it. Senator Clark. Senator Clark moves 1189A as amended to be, and what was the, to send it to the floor or to, for?
It sounds like it's already been to business, jobs, and industry. So there's not another committee is requested.
No, to the floor is fine.
To the floor, all right.
And Mr. Chair, it sounds like maybe there's a little bit more work before it gets to the floor.
All right. On Senator Clark's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The same sign? No. A motion is adopted.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for the time you've given us.
Next we have Senator, or this committee is adjourned. And the